Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. Back to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
This radio show has been on air, I think we're going on 17 years. It's ridiculous. 17 years of radio, that's a lot of talking. But there's a trivia question that, for longtime listeners, let me just pose a trivia question. Like, we've had some big guests over the years. Does anybody know, Adam, do you know who the very first guest of the very first ever Bald-Faced Truth radio show was?
Is it Barack Obama?
He was on the first day, but he wasn't the first guest. He was the second or third guest because he came later in the show.
Yeah, I know you had Obama early on. I don't know who the first ever guest is.
The first ever guest ever is the guy that will be joining us here in a couple minutes, Peter Jacobson. He was the very first guest on the very first show, and I can remember, I often will go back and listen to some of those early shows. They were terrible.
What was do you know the first question you ever asked?
I don't, but I wasn't very good. I'm so much better now. Like, I might not be worth a damn anymore, but I'm so much better now than I was in that first show. And I don't know if you ever go back and, like, you listen to anything that you did or watch anything you did for the first time, but, man, I was a little bit raw. I didn't quite grasp it, but it's one of these things, like getting reps here in radio or TV or anywhere else, riding a bike, playing golf, whatever. You need to get reps to get better. You need to play to get better. And I always tell young kids who have a chance to be on a team, like maybe you're on a club team and you have a chance to be on like the better team, like the A team in your club versus maybe being on the B team, but on the A team, you're not going to play. You're going to be on the bench, and on the B team, you're going to be, you know, a starter. Like, I always would encourage kids to take the reps, especially at a young age, because I needed the reps. Like, you know, your updates, Adam. Like, you know, do you feel like your updates get better and better and better?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still the outliers that are going to be awful. But I go back to play-by-play broadcasting all the time. Like, I started when I was a sophomore in college. And you think back to then, you're like, oh, man, that was a good broadcast. And you go back and listen to it and be like, oh, my God, how did I attach my name to this? And I think the same thing. So now I'll finish a broadcast, University of Portland, and be like, oh, that was a good broadcast. I'm sure I'll listen to it in 2 years and just be embarrassed by it. But that's what it is. It's just reps improvement over and over again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll have Peter Jacobs in here in a second. I'm talking to one of his reps here, messaging with one of his reps. He's going to be calling in here momentarily. But I just know, like, when I it's funny in radio because you can't hide. You know, it's not one of these things where you can hide out. I had jobs like in my 20s where, you know, one time I had a part-time job. It was just a seasonal job, and I went to work at this company that needed – it was an accounting firm. I am not a numbers person. I am not an accountant. But I went in, and I said, hey, I'm only going to be here for like a week. It was in a summer. You know, I was just making some walking around money. And they assessed me and said, okay, we're not going to turn you into a accountant overnight, but we will we'll give you a job that you can handle. And I can remember the days at that job just taking so long because I was bored and I was looking at numbers. Now, if you're a numbers person and you love numbers, bless you. We need numbers people in the world. I'm not one of them. But on radio, you can't hide. Like, you can't hide from a mistake. You can't hide your inexperience because you're actually talking and interviewing. And when I went back and listened to some of the you know, appearances that I had or some of the interviews that I did, they were just – the shows were not very good. And so bless you if you have been here from the beginning, and bless you if you are a longtime listener. And I got to say also, you know, Peter Jacobson, bless Peter Jacobson all those years ago for coming on the radio show And I don't even know if Peter Jacobson is aware that he is the answer to the trivia question, who was the first ever guest on the Bald Faced Truth radio show? What was it, 15, 16, 17 years ago? I can't even remember. That's how long I've been doing it. But here he is, making his triumphant return to the airwaves, one Peter Jacobson. Thank you, sir. Did you know that you were the first ever guest on this show?
Yes, you've told me. I was the first, and I think President Obama was number two. Is that right?
Yeah, you got on base, and he knocked you in. That's how it went.
Good to talk with you, John.
Yeah, great to hear your voice. Where are you today? Are you in Florida, or where are you hanging out?
Yep, my wife and I are back home in Naples. I worked last week up in Atlanta for Golf Channel. I'm back home this week and heading out to New York to see some grandkids next week. So, yeah, I'm just kind of bopping around, busy schedule with kids all over the country, kids and grandkids.
Amen to that. It's interesting for me because we're watching all the controversy in golf, and I was thinking today, like, who would be uniquely qualified? Who's got some broadcast in him, has got good opinions, and who has played the game, you know, walked the fairways, so to speak, in a golfer's shoes? And Peter Jacobson's the answer to that. I got to know, let's start with just, you know, the PGA coming up. You got a major coming up. You know, how are you feeling about the sport of golf right now? Everybody's buzzing about the controversy, but just in general, where do you stand on kind of what you see going on?
Well, I think the PGA Tour and the game of golf is as strong as ever. I do know that the President's Cup coming up this September has broken all the sales for attendance, television advertising. It's going to be a huge event. And I think, obviously, coming out of the pandemic, golf was strengthened during the pandemic because everybody was home. They were together. They wanted to get outside, and they wanted to do an activity outside. So the game of golf is incredibly strong. And we've got some great young kids that represent the PGA Tour right now. I think the top five or top six players in the world are all under the age of 30. And you've got guy number one, Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, obviously Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy. You've got so many great young players with wonderful perspectives about what this game is doing for them, what it's doing for the communities in which they play, and the charities that those communities represent and support. So I am totally bullish on the kids, the young men that play the PGA Tour now and carry the mantle.
I think it's a really different place too. When I see the sponsorship money, when I see the purses, when I see, you know, the commercials, even when I'm watching on television. I used to watch you play and Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson sitting alongside my grandfather, who was just a diehard golf fan, and I would watch you guys, you know, play in those tournaments in the 80s, and you know, Buick would sponsor and stuff like that. But you know, the money now, how different does that feel to you when you look at sort of the purses and the money that some guys are making today?
Well, I look at it with admiration. I'm happy for the young men playing today. I'm happy for the purse level and the increases, because I remember when I was playing and I was winning tournaments or making money, I looked back at players like Palmer and Nicklaus and Player, and we were making multiples of the money that they made, and now the kids today make multiples of the money we made. So it's only better. It's only progress. Makes all the sense in the world. But the bottom line is these communities we play in, that the 501c3s or the nonprofit organizations that represent the charities, they're the ones that benefit. All the golf fans in these communities, and that's what's most important. And I know these young kids today love to play in front of the fans, and they love to showcase their talents and basically grow the game along the way.
Peter Jacobson, our guest. You may hear him as an analyst on the Golf Channel and on NBC. And if you remember, the University of Oregon star played on the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour. And, you know, when you look back kind of at the start of your career and, you know, where it took you and into broadcasting now, Peter, like, did you ever imagine that it would be a lifetime in golf?
No, this is... A lifetime in golf was a complete surprise to me. When I was when I was at the University of Oregon and I was playing collegiate golf, I had an inkling I might want to try to play pro golf, but I wasn't sure I was good enough to play on the PGA Tour because I didn't travel much in the summer. My brother David and I, who we were joined by the hip playing a lot of tournament golf, we had no idea how our game would stack up against the best players in the amateur game at that time. So when I went to the qualifying school and I got my card, I still had no idea how I would do. So when I look back now, it's almost 46 years, I look back on a career that allowed me to keep my card, win tournaments, and then I progressed into a broadcasting career I couldn't have guessed this, or I really had no idea what was ahead of me.
1976, you qualify for the PGA Tour in your first attempt. Was that, in your mind, as it should happen? Were you nervous that day? Were you, you're in a qualifying tournament. What do you remember about that day?
Well, I really don't. I don't know if it was supposed to happen. I went down there thinking I was really good and really smart, and I got down there and I realized I had no idea what I was doing because it was such a new world. The only shot I remember, we played six rounds of golf in Brownsville, Texas, in the pouring rain, and it was cold down in Brownsville, Texas. And I had a four iron out of a fairway bunker on the very last hole, and I knew I needed to make par to have a chance, and I knocked a four iron out of the bunker on the green, and I two-putted for my par, and I got it. I got one of the 22 spots at the time. I tied for, 17th spot through 22. So I got one of the last spots, which allowed me to go out on tour, and it was exhilarating and so exciting, but also frightening at the same time.
Let's fast forward to 2003, the Greater Hartford Open. You're 49 years old. You'd already won on the PGA Tour plenty and played in a bunch of majors, but at the age of 49, you win that tournament. You become one of the oldest players to win on the tour at that time. What did that feel like?
Well, it's pretty funny. I had won the Greater Hartford Open. It was called the Sammy Davis Jr. Greater Hartford Open back in 1984, so I was a familiar figure there, being a past champion. I played every year. I knew everybody there. And I was on the edge of turning 50 and going on to the Champions Tour, and I showed up, and I was playing well, and I thought, hey, you never know what's going to happen. And sure enough, I played well enough to win, and I was like, wow, okay, well, maybe I'm going to delay the Champions Tour for a couple of years, and I stayed out on the regular tour because it is difficult for players, and I know in talking to Jim Furyk, my very good friend who's now just turned 50 and he's now on the Champions Tour, it's really difficult to leave the big tour behind when you leave the Tiger Woodses and the Ernie Els and the Furyks. When I'm talking about when I was getting ready to leave to turn 50, it's hard to leave that behind because that's the big show. That is the big show. But once I got out on the Champions Tour and I realized all those guys were my age and they were my friends, it became very comfortable and a lot of fun. And I wouldn't do it any differently, but I might have played a little more golf on the Champions Tour when I turned 50 rather than stay on the tour for an extra 2 years.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, though. I think we see it across sports. It's, you know, when you're leaving sort of the heavyweight fight, the arena that has the lights on it and so much attention, it's got to be a difficult thing to walk from that. That makes me think about Tom Brady. You surprised Brady came back? And what about broadcasting? So you've made the successful transition from being a high-level professional athlete who is now a broadcaster. You hear him on the Golf Channel. You hear him on NBC. He's got a podcast. Do you think Tom Brady's going to be any good as a broadcaster?
It's hard to tell. We don't know at this point. I do know that Brady didn't surprise me that he unretired and came back because he's a competitor. Obviously, being a six-round pick out of Michigan, the guy's got a chip on his shoulder, and he became the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. Now, when you go into broadcasting, I don't care if you are the greatest quarterback or the greatest golfer or the greatest baseball player, you won't know if you're any good at broadcast until you put that headset on. You can be really glib and really funny with interviews when John Canzano's asking you questions and saying, wow, that was a great pass. What were you thinking when you came back to win that game? You can be in your own world. But when you do broadcasting, you have to depart your world and get into everybody else's world. When I'm broadcasting a tournament, I'm not thinking of myself. I don't insert myself into the golf. I know a lot of broadcasters, former players, who do that, but that's unnecessary and irresponsible. So that's why I think Romo's been so good. Romo, he doesn't insert himself. Romo basically builds the play, tells you what's going to happen, and then, and whether he's right or wrong, he'll tell you about what happened. So do I think Brady's going to be good? I think he's probably will, but we won't know until the headset goes on and the microphone goes in front of his face and somebody asks him a question about Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers trying to beat Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Why are they going to win or why are they going to lose? Because you've got to put your analyst hat on and you've got to think about other people, which is hard for superstars to do.
Peter Jacobson with us, PGA golfer, Champions Tour, Golf Channel, also on NBC. We've got Phil Mickelson may show up at the PGA Championship to defend his title. You've got, you know, golfers asking for exemptions, the PGA Tour, which I don't blame, saying, nope, we're going to protect our sponsors and our events, and we're not going to allow that. What do you make of what's going on with the Saudi-backed Tour and the PGA Tour?
I have been on the tour now, as you pointed out, 45, 46 years, and I am everything who I am because of the PGA Tour and what I've been able to do through the organization. The organization has been around for over 60 years, and it's been, I guess, well, let's see, it started in 68, so what would that be, 50, 54 years. Architects like Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer put this together, and it has been hugely successful, and it's benefited the communities where we play and the charities that they support. This LIV event is really all about money. It's just about money in the short term. And if the players want to go, I say go. But they have to realize that they're looking at some long-term implications for short-term money. And whether it's Mickelson or Sergio or Westwood or Poulter, if they want to go, leave. But I just don't think they should be tearing down the PGA Tour to try to build up this LIV Tour. I'm going to go on record, John, and say I don't think any of these events are going to happen. I never did. I still don't. I know there's plans being made for one in London and one in Portland in our backyard there, Pumpkin Ridge. I still don't think it's going to happen. You saw Norman's comments yesterday about when Khashoggi was murdered. And he said, yeah, well, we all make mistakes. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Those are some inflammatory statements that nobody can make, nobody should make. So, and then what Phil said also in his interview with Alan Shipnuck with his book, I just think that you've got two of your biggest proponents, Greg and Phil, and all they're doing is stepping in it, is what they're doing. So I think, again, I will just go say that it's all about money. It's all about short-term cash. Nobody's mentioned charities. Nobody's mentioned communities. Nobody's mentioned any of that thing, which is so important to each event that we play on the PGA Tour. And until somebody comes along with a better mousetrap, I'm going to support the PGA Tour till the day I die.
I'm glad you said that. I think, you know, Pumpkin Ridge, the employees out there, I've talked to several who are not comfortable with the event coming out there. I know that, you know, the owners of Pumpkin Ridge it's a Texas-based firm called Escalante Golf. And, you know, I think part of the reason that they're allowing it to happen, it's not part of the reason, it is the reason, it's money. And I'm surprised to see a few golfers that did apply for the exemption. I thought it would be European golfers and journeymen, but we're seeing a couple of PGA Tour, you know, regulars and some bigger names involved. How do you think the rest of the tour will treat players who put a foot in the sand or draw a line in the sand and say, hey, I'm going to play in this thing because I need to go earn money? Will those players suffer backlash?
No, I don't think so. Again, every player has to do what's right for them. We don't know. Maybe a mid-30s, maybe early 40s-year-old player, he may be tired of playing professional golf. He wants to make some quick money and retire and spend time with his family. We may have somebody who is injured, somebody who knows that his back is going or his hip is going, and he wants to get in and get out quick. Yeah. We don't know that, and I don't think it's really any of our business to ask that question. I think that if a player like Sergio or Adam Scott or Lee Westwood, if they want to go, I would wholeheartedly support them going and joining a new tour. But they have to deal with the ramifications or what happens with the PGA Tour. Let's not forget the PGA Tour is a membership organization. There are rules and regulations that you have to deal with. It's no different than you in your show. If all of a sudden you started dropping F-bombs and saying crazy, crazy, dirty things, you're going to get pulled right off the air. There are rules and regulations that we all have to adhere to, and the PGA Tour is no different. But if they want to go, I wish them the best of luck and go, because one thing we learn in professional golf, if you take a week off, there's somebody going to fill your spot, and there's always a young guy ready to knock you off the pedestal. Who would have heard of Scottie Scheffler 4 or 5 years ago or Colin Morikawa 4 or 5 years ago? Only the people in those communities and where they played. Colin played at Cal and Scottie played at Texas. Those people knew they were going to be great, but here they are. They're the best in the game. There's somebody right now in college, 3-4 years behind right now, that's going to be in the top 10 in the world. So if the guys want to go and take the money, I say good luck to you.
Peter Jacobson, you're the best. Absolute fire. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
You got it, John. Hey, listen, I love your new subscription. I think it's great. I encourage everybody to subscribe and get John every day. I applaud what you're doing.
Peter Jacobson, you're the best. Thank you, my friend. There he is. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Coming up top of the hour, we'll talk to Maury Brown about the business of baseball, what's going on with the game itself. He will be joining us top of the hour here. Love the interview with Peter Jacobson. If you missed any part of it, grab the podcast of that and appreciate what Jacobson said late in the interview, especially. He was basically trying to encourage people to subscribe and read me at johncanzano.com, and I appreciate that from him. Coming up top of the hour, we'll talk some baseball. We've got Punch It Audio. I want you to leave it right here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.